And now on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about electronic harassment. What the heck are they trying to do with us and to us? Roger Tulsis joins us, and we'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. You can't go anywhere nowadays without hearing a story of some kind of spying by the NSA, red light cameras capturing you all over the place. Just intrusion, intrusion, intrusion. Roger Tulsis, of course, is a Los Angeles-based private investigator. He specializes in electronic countermeasures. For years, he has swept locations for bugs and wiretaps. And, of course, his website, bugsweeps.com. You can find that at coasttocoastam.com. Roger, always a pleasure to bring you on.
Hey, George. Always great to modulate the waves with you, buddy.
It seems every time you come on, there's been more atrocities of government spying and things like that. What's going on?
Well, George, the real big story, since we were last on with you, I did a show with John Wells on July 28th of 2012, and we spent a chunk of the show talking about the new NSA facility and what we thought the reason for it and what it was going to mean. And, of course, since then, Snowden has exposed a lot of what's going on, and that is the huge story. We are getting more information about the technologies that this agency is using to totally crush our Fourth Amendment rights, and I'd like to go over some of the details on some of the stuff they're doing right now during the show here tonight.
Sure, and they're just not stopping, are they?
Well, this is kind of what happens when a great power goes into decline. Because before, you know, we were strong militarily, we could afford to have military around the world and be the world cop and all that. But, you know, after this last debacle of $3 trillion being spent in Iran, and Iran looks like it's falling right back into the same disruption it was before we got there.
You mean Iraq?
Iraq. Iraq and all that and all those assets squandered there. And America, hey, listen, America's broke. $17 trillion in declared debt, and if you add the liabilities for the Medicare and the Social Security, you know, anywhere from $50 to $100
trillion. Unbelievable.
And also, I have to say, from my research, I believe that the Federal Reserve is insolvent. And after we go through some of this other information about the spying, maybe we talk about because a lot of this has to do with why America has become so desperate that it now has thrown the Fourth Amendment aside and decided it's going to spy not only on its own citizens, but it's going to spy on the whole world, including its friends.
Yeah. How can they collect so much data, Roger? Where does it go?
Well, that's the reason that they built this new million square feet facility up in Bluffdale, Utah. They literally didn't have the ability to power that many computers out of the old location on the military bases in Maryland. So they had to find a new location. Mm-hmm. This location has its own power generating plant and can support that. But you have to understand what they were planning to do. I mean, at this point, the arguments on metadata, and we really need to maybe tell the listeners a little bit about what the metadata is, because I know you know what it is, right?
Yeah, well, a little bit, not quite as much as I should.
All right, well, let's just talk about that for a second, because if you, as an example, have a cell phone, and most people do, when you initiate a call, not only is your calling number stored in the computers of whatever company
you use, like Verizon or something like that.
Okay. Not only is the calling information stored, but the time of the conversation and who you called. So here you got both the caller, calling party, and the receiving party. You know those numbers. And you also, you have on the cell phone, you have the location data. In other words, it will list the actual cell tower that you made the call from. And the other day, I actually have a Verizon one, and I went on my website here to just look and see what information it had. And I had made a trip across the country here, and they had listed all my ingoing and outgoing calls relating to my location. So, in other words, every call that went gave me a cell tower in a specific – it didn't list the cell tower by number, but it listed the actual city location. So you could literally go back and look at my bill, and you could see what days I was in what locations, depending on all the calls that came through. But the other thing that people don't understand is that any time your cell phone moves from point to point and it logs on with a new cell tower, inside the data of the phone company, it's also logging on that you passed through that tower and that tower had a handshake with your phone. So that means, you know, every 30 minutes or so, there's a check-in.
Involved. Right, and they know.
Okay, so this is metadata. So the big argument is now, because this metadata is being taken into the NSA's computers, and they are taking metadata for every landline phone and every cell phone and all the smartphones, you know, anytime you connect to the internet, they're taking all this data in. So let's take a second and look back into the history of envelope information, because in my view, this would be envelope information. It's kind of like an envelope that you would send in the mail, in the sense that, you know, you're the sending party. You put your return address, who it's mailed, going to be mailed to, and the post office puts a stamp on it. Now, going back to the founding fathers, the first mail system that they had was 1775, and it was before the creation of the federal government. Because the Constitution wasn't really put together until 1787. So back in among the colonies, they put together this mail system, and the whole idea was that when you handed a piece of mail over to your post person, that they had a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that mail arrived at the receiving party without being opened. So that sets the precedent to me that envelope information should be covered by the Fourth Amendment, because if envelope information, if they considered, our founding fathers considered it was allowable that the government would log every piece of mail going out and every piece of mail coming in to put it into some kind of data log to keep track of what was going on between all the people in the colonies for further evaluation by the crown or whoever would be in power to be looking at that kind of stuff. I certainly think when they wrote the First Amendment and they said that people are secure in their persons, houses, and papers and effects, that would cover that mail going between one individual and another. Does that seem to make sense?
Well, it does. And what's ironic, Roger, is if people said that the government was opening up my mail and looking at it and then sealing it back up and giving it to us, that they were actually looking at our enveloped mail, the outcry would be astronomical compared to what's happening now. And though there's been some furor over the fact that they're looking at emails and phone messages and text messages,
yeah,
I really believe that if somehow Snowden said, and they're opening up every piece of mail that is mailed, people would go ballistic. But they're not over this.
The point that they're making is that they're not listening to the content of the phone conversation. See, that's what they're saying, is that it's not lawful for them to listen to the United States citizens' phone conversations. But my point being is that if they've got this data, and it would be as if the government back in 1777 kept an ongoing list of everybody you communicated with, in case later on they wanted to form a charge of conspiracy, because George Norrie, let's find out who George Norrie was corresponding with. Was he involved in a group of people that revolutionary ideas relating to setting up a new country? So you never know when the government can charge people with conspiracy just based on linking their associations.
Well, I've already had two coast-to-coast guests that have been indicted for things. One, campaign finance abuse, they say, Denise D'Souza, and then the other, Dr. Robert Young, PhD, not medical, 18 felony counts of practicing without a medical license and things like that. And I just think it's interesting that governments will go after these people when these people start going after governments and the way they handle people. I mean, it seems like you kick up the dust, Roger, and they come after you.
Well, and of course, this their whole point of doing this kind of thing is to be able to silence the people that they want to silence, which is the whole horrible part of the structure of the NSA, because, you know, nobody was elected that runs the NSA. All these people were people that were just given this assignment by, it's hard to tell who exactly is, it puts them in power.
Right. And how long they've been there.
And kind of, you run into this kind of Michael Corleone situation. You remember when Michael Corleone in The Godfather 2, he was trying to get a gambling license.
In Vegas, I remember.
It was California. I think it was for the Tahoe property. But anyway, he's sitting across from this senator that has the ability to get him the license. He was a senator from Nevada. And the senator doesn't like him. He said, you know, I don't like your greasy Italians. He was very assaulting to Michael. And Michael said to him, you know, at this point, you can pay for the license. And, you know, he said, whatever. So, you know, several scenes later, here is this senator. He wakes up in bed with a dead prostitute. And Frito, Michael's brother, says, well, you're lucky. You're in my hotel. We can keep this whole thing from anybody knowing. And so as a consequence, Michael Corleone now has this individual in his pocket.
A little blackmail.
Well, he just had that in his pocket. But I want to read a little bit about a little history about this kind of thing in the United States government. You recall J. Edgar Hoover.
Yep, sure do.
Head of the FBI, crime fighter, and all that kind of stuff. Well, back in his time, there was no laws against phone tapping. So what happened with him is back in the 1940s, he only had 650 people in the FBI. And as they went from about that time up into the 1940s, around the time of the war, they moved up to 13,000 people. But what Hoover was doing is he was wiretapping whoever he wanted. And as a consequence, here's a quote from this interesting article that I sent you a copy of. It says here, the moment Hoover would get something on a senator, recalled William Sullivan, the FBI's chief domestic intelligence officer during the 1960s. He'd send one of the errand boys up and advise the senator that we're in the course of an investigation and we by chance happened to come up with this data on your daughter. From that time on, the senator was in his right pocket. After his death, an official tally found that Hoover had 883 such files on senators and 722 more on congressmen. So this is a frightening situation where you have one individual that's been not an elected individual, has been given the power to have these kind of dossiers, and literally can affect the operation of a government.
Absolutely, and that's why he stayed so long, because every elected official was afraid of him.
Exactly. And then he went on to do things like the terrible stuff he did with Martin Luther King, with tapping his phones and then releasing information about him.
So as we look at this and bring it up to speed with what's happening today, Roger, everybody will probably say, look, they're not going to listen to my stuff. It's not, you know, it's not going to affect me. So what? One day you might have that Edgar Hoover in there who might do that.
Well, the problem is that you've created a section of government that was not created by the people. You know, we have this balance of power between the three branches of the government, but there's not a fourth branch called the NSA. But if the NSA has this kind of power that Hoover had, anytime any legislation came up about either NSA funding or NSA power or, you know,
anything
to back the NSA down, they would just have to make the calls to those senators that they've got these kind of dossiers on and say, Senator, you know, we know your situation with cocaine problem. We know your situation with this extramarital affair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can literally take over control of the government. A fourth section of government that was not ever put in place by the founding fathers. It's really frightening.
And how do we know, Roger, that's not being done now?
I think it is being done, George. I think it is being done, and it's being done out of desperation because there's nobody in Congress that wants to stop this surveillance, because America is in such desperate shape relating to its decline in the world and its economic problems that they're hoping that this level of surveillance will help America retain the power that's
right.
losing.
I mean, originally they said to us, hey, this is going to stop terrorism. That's what we're doing. I'm not sure they've caught anybody because of this, have they?
No, I don't think they've caught anybody. But the frightening thing is, here's where they were going with this thing, and this million square feet of computer systems that they're throwing up in Bluffdale. They were eventually going to get the Congress to say, okay, go ahead and store all the conversations, and then if later on in an investigation, go to a judge, and they will give you the warrant to release the conversations out of the database.
Go and retrieve it.
Yeah, so literally everybody's conversation, everybody's text messages, everybody's browsing records would be sitting in this bazillion monster computer memory with bazillions of bits of everything stored permanently, and there would be no privacy on any of those levels ongoing.
Unbelievable. Well, today, if they're looking at mine, they're going to see my text message to my 14-year-old granddaughter, who's going to be in a play, Guys and Dolls, one of the old musicals, and also her birthday, and some fun stuff when I come back.
Yeah.
And so it's stored away somewhere in case they ever need it, huh?
Well, you know, the point is you never know. When somebody's got the ability, especially to get into your computers, because one of the other big articles that have come up here, and when I went when I did this last show with John Wells, we discussed the Manchurian microchip, that there was a lot of speculation that as all these computers are manufactured in the Orient, the Chinese have put it backdoors in all these computers.
And they can monitor everything.
Well, and they can monitor everything. So the interesting point is that now, from Snowden's revelation, there is this other interesting article that relates to what they've actually found out about how they have put that the NSA has actually done a very similar thing relating to putting in these back doors. Now, some of the back doors have to do with software, and some of them have to do with hardware. And so they found out that not only did they put these back doors in so that they can get information out, but as an example, what happens if you get into a situation where they decide to put child pornography on your...
And you never looked at it. And you never looked at it, but it's on your computer, and you probably don't even know it.
Yeah, they just raid your place one day and take your PC out, and there it is.
You're up the river.
Yeah. So anyway, this was this big article that came out that said NSA devises radio pathway into computers. So what they're finding out is that not only did the NSA intercept computers that were manufactured and brought into the U.S. and install backdoor in both hardware and software, and then release those computers to be delivered to targets, but they also created a separate radio system that doesn't even use the internet to get the information in and out of the computers. In other words, built into the hardware of the computer itself is a hidden radio transmitter and receiver.
Unbelievable. Brilliant.
So that they can, at any point, use their own channels to move information out and into these computers.
Is it going to get better or worse for us, Roger?
Well, I think it's getting worse, and I'll tell you why, because I think as we learn more about what's going on, we're not only is the government losing trust with the people in the United States, but they're losing trust with all their partners around the world.
Hold it right there, Roger. We're going to take this break. We're going to come right back with you. Roger Tulsis with us as we talk about electronic harassment. Wow. We'll be back. Are you being electronically harassed, or you want to check in with us? We'll take your calls next hour with Roger Tulsis. More to talk with him about this electronic harassment and the Federal Reserve that he thinks they're going to go bust. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast. Roger Tulsis with us. Roger, so I guess you could say that the internet has been a blessing and a curse?
Well, obviously, it's given us another pathway to get news outside of the corporate news, which is pretty awful. They regurgitate basically whatever the government says, and they're basically puppets. One of the reasons I like to watch the RT quite a bit, it's very clever when you consider what the Russians did. They throw up this TV station and they give all the young, independent thinking, kind of semi-radical young people in America TV shows. Have you watched the RT?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so it's people like Abby Martin. You're not going to hear the kind of stuff that she's critical of on mainline corporate news.
No, it's not going to happen.
Because the corporations are never going to step on each other's toes, and so as a consequence, you never really get the real news. They're talking about who shot who in your neighborhood and car crashes but nothing serious. And I don't know. You're never going to hear anybody really even critical of the NSA.
How do you know that this is going to fester and get worse?
Well, it already is. But one of the interesting things that's happened relating to distrust among countries that we are supposed to be getting along with is that as these other countries, you remember the German prime minister, they had tapped her cell phone, Merkel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was part of the mix.
And so what does that say if you're a friend, if I'm tapping your telephone? In other words, George, you're my buddy, but now you find out that I went to your house and I tapped into
your computer. Pretty low, Roger.
Well, you would say that the nasty private eye, he has no business listening to my private conversations, and I thought he was my friend.
And I probably would say I'm not going to deal with you anymore.
There you go. I wouldn't be your friend anymore.
That's right.
So, at any rate, to make the point is that when you do this to your friends, that causes distrust, and it causes distrust on so many levels. Not only on the government level, but can I trust you not to be spying on my industries?
Is it smart business doing what they're doing?
Well, I don't think it's ever smart business to cheat your partners.
Well, when they
and don't. I think and keep in mind, one of the things that's happened is that the world was buying both United States manufactured computer software and hardware, and now they don't want to buy it. They can't trust it.
Good point. At what point did they go too far? I mean, could this have worked dealing with the so-called possible terrorists and just monitoring those people, the people that we think could cause harm?
Well, I don't think it's really an effective way to do that either, because you really need feet on the ground in a lot of these things. You need infiltration. So, just to be listening to phone calls in and of themselves. But, once again, it's this ability to be able to go into the metadata base and connect all these phone conversations together that will give you the theory for a conspiracy. Now, let me tell you about another thing that's rather interesting about metadata as well. Do you know what a tower dump is?
I do not.
Okay. Each cell tower that operates and you are in that area using your cell phone, your call is directed through that particular tower that's closest to you, and the system decides which one that is. But every time you make a call and it goes through that particular tower, the data in that tower keeps track of all the phone transaction information for billing and also for other aspects of maintenance.
Okay.
But when you make the call, whatever tower is nearest you will then register that you made the call. It'll register who you called to, the time of the call, and other information about your location. Well, here's an interesting application on that. There was a bank robbery down in Arizona, and then every week there was another bank robbery within the general same part of the country. Two guys were going in, pulling out a gun, robbing the banks.
Same guys, same MO.
Yeah, same guys. So what the FBI decided to do is they figured, well, let's go to the towers that were closest to that bank during the period of time around the robberies, within, say, 6 hours on either side of the robberies,
okay,
and let's dump the cell phone tower information for that cell phone tower at that particular robbery location, and let's have a look at all the phone numbers that transacted during that period of time. So they went to every cell tower that was near the bank robbery in five separate bank robberies that they thought were these same guys. And then what they did is out of those transaction records, they pulled out 150,000 phone numbers. They put it in a spreadsheet, and they asked the spreadsheet to tell them, was there any numbers that were common to those cell tower locations during those robberies? And there was.
And probably not a lot.
No, it was just only two phone numbers. One guy calling the other guy, and the other guy calling the other guy.
So
based on that, they went to where these people were, and they put them under surveillance, and then they nabbed them as they were doing their next.
Okay,
bank.
Isn't that brilliant?
Well, it is brilliant, but at the same time, they got 150,000 other people's phone records.
All right, so but how do you weed through this and get just those two guys and not worry about the other people?
Well,
can't they just get rid of it?
In other words, the excess phone numbers after the fact?
Yeah, just delete them all.
That's what they did do. But still, the question becomes, your phone number might have ended up being at one of those transaction records. And, you know, the question is, do you really want the government then looking at where you were?
Well, but will they? I mean, I got to say that on the face of it, and, you're talking to Roger, a concealed weapons permit holder, a gun supporter, and things like that. Mm-hmm. But on the face of it, this was brilliant police work.
Well, it just shows you the power of the metadata. You know, the words, part of the story I'm trying to give you here is the power of metadata. Because it can place you where you are at any particular time relating to your phone conversations and also, as I said before, the handshakes.
I guess what you have to weigh, and here's the big question to you, is what's more important, catching those two thugs who robbed five banks this way and getting data on everybody else that you're not going to use, or missing the opportunity to get those two people?
Well, I understand that in this particular case, it sounds great, but the question is should the government know your locations? In other words, should they be able to just go to any tower, dump the data, and know everybody that was in an area? And is there some way, as an example, that can end up being a problem? Because as an example, let's say that you decide to go to a protest. So you're there, you know, doing what we do in America when we don't like something. You go to a big protest, and here's the FBI and those agencies going and asking for all the tower dump information for all those people that were at the protest, because they know that they were within range of this one particular tower. And now they have a list of everybody that was out there protesting a particular piece of legislation they didn't like.
Well, let me give you another example. Some serial killer is out there. And he's picking up people from different areas, and he's killing these people. And, you know, and he's got this crazed mentality thing about him. He's looking for a certain kind of woman. So he's killed, let's say, five of them. But they catch the guy under the same system you mentioned with these two bank robbers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth it in that case.
Okay. Well, I just want to make the point that the metadata is powerful in different ways that you haven't even thought about. In other words, this dialed information and the fact that you were at this location at that time is all information that's going on out of your cell phone all the time.
So here's the other question. How can we make sure that this stuff, this information, just isn't used when it's unnecessary?
Well, what you do is you require, as the founding fathers said, that you're going to be secure in your persons, houses, papers, and effects, except for the situation where they would have a warrant supported by probable cause and affirmation. In other words, they say right in the Fourth Amendment that, yeah, go to a judge and ask a judge. But on the controversy about metadata right now that's being stored at the NSA is that no judge has allowed any particular use of metadata on probable cause, because they're just taking everything.
Everything, sure. It's a dilemma. It's a tough call.
Yeah, it is a tough call.
I mean, on one hand, I would like to just blanketly say, you will not spy on Americans at all. At all. You won't monitor cell phones, any of this. But then when you cite examples like catching these thugs, it sounds kind of reasonable.
Yeah, well, the whole tower dump thing is quite an interesting phenomenon. So, you know. Now, the other part of this thing that I think is interesting is when we were getting back to what the NSA was actually doing about getting into the computers, you know, the Pentagon Cyber Command have implanted nearly 100,000 computer network exploits around the world. In other words, they've put covert software in other people's computers around the world to collect information. And then the question comes, does the NSA use its foreign intelligence capabilities to steal trade secrets of foreign companies on behalf of U.S. companies?
I bet they do.
So then what? I mean, now you have even less trust.
Yeah, now that's going too far.
And Snowden, it was interesting, the 2008 map, which was part of the Snowden release, he notes 20 programs to gain access to the big fiber cables. He calls them covert, clandestine, or cooperative large accesses, not only in the United States, but in places like Hong Kong, Indonesia, Middle East. So here they are tying into the data, the major data centers, not only in the United States, but all over the world.
You were just mentioning that you think the Federal Reserve is going belly up.
Yep.
Tell me why.
Well, here's the interesting part. And as Germany became more distrustful of America, they asked the Federal Reserve to repatriate the gold that's been sitting there since the war, World War II. And what happened is during World War II, there was over 300 metric tons of gold brick, bullion, that was moved out of Germany and into the Federal Reserve. And of course, at the time, the Federal New York was the center of trade.
Right.
So that when you were doing deals between countries, these tons of gold would sit there as the transactional base. But since Germany decided, well, you know, we don't really trust America anymore, because apparently this is what's going on with a lot of people, especially with some of the other disclosures about the financial stuff that happened during the 2008 crash. So the Federal Reserve says to Germany, well, they said, we'd like to come in and audit our gold, because apparently their gold has stamps on it. In other words, when the old gold bars were made, they were stamped with the German stampings on it. So they say, we're going to send our auditors over, and the Federal Reserve refuses to give them access to their gold. They refuse to allow the German auditors to come to New York to look in the Federal Reserve vault at the German gold that they've been holding, 300 metric tons.
There's nothing in there.
Then after the fact, what happens is, you know, it really starts to boil over, because the people in Germany, in terms of the government there, they become pretty indignant. I mean, can you imagine you going to your bank and asking your bank to look at what you've got in savings, and they're refusing to even talk to you?
There are some banks that you go to get cash out, and they say, we can't do this. And I'm not talking about a tremendous amount of cash either.
Yeah.
They just simply say, well, I'm sorry, we just don't have enough cash on hand.
Well,
what?
Yeah,
it's a bank.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, what happens is that they finally settle on an agreement where the Federal Reserve will give them their 300 metric tons of gold back in 7 years.
When they can find it and collect it.
Well, this is the smoking gun, because
they're going to run around to find it.
They were supposed to deliver, I think, about 7 metric tons this year as the first part of the delivery, and they were only able to make 5 metric tons. They were unable to meet the first delivery.
They've defaulted already.
Well, pretty much so. They were unable to meet the 700 tons. And, of course, what's been happening is, as they've been trying to keep the price and value of gold down by naked shorting on the COMEX, the United States government goes in there and sells short without actually having the gold to drive the gold price down. And what's happened is that caused all the people that were invested in gold in the ETFs, the exchange-traded funds, to sell out their gold. And all this gold has been moving to China. It's been moving to...
Physically
moving to China. China is now going to declare, they're supposed to in the next few months declare how many metric tons they've got on hand right now. And they think that they're going to say they've got 2,700 metric tons. But in reality, they think that they've got about 15,000 metric tons. They and India have been buying up all the gold that's leaving the West.
They could be the two richest nations on the planet.
Well, let's think about what they're up to, because right now all the currencies in the world are fiat.
That's right, which means backed by nothing.
Backed by nothing. Backed by the good faith and credit of a country that's declared $17 trillion in debt, but it's probably $50 or $60 trillion. So the thing you have to understand is Federal Reserve notes are basically stock in the Federal Reserve Bank.
That's it.
That's what they are. You're kind of a stockholder. That's a somewhat of a stock certificate. It's a non-interest-bearing debt note, but it's basically a stock certificate. And here, with these QE to infinity and zero interest, they've been cranking out this paper. So if there is no gold anymore, and the Federal Reserve has been spending billions of dollars buying U.S. bonds,
yep. They just lowered it again to $65 billion. Thank God.
Then actually, they're just holding bad paper.
Yep.
So there is the general statement that if, in fact, the Federal Reserve is insolvent and they can't go back to the U.S. government because they are the central bank, how are they going to go back to the U.S. Congress and say, dig us out because we don't have any gold, we don't have the underlying store of value
right.
that we need.
We never did.
Currency.
We just kept printing.
That's right. So now what happens is, you know what's going to happen? China is going to step in and take over the Federal Reserve.
You're kidding me.
I think they're the only people that can dig the Federal Reserve out of the hole.
So they come in and take over the Federal Reserve. What kind of incredible power does that give that country?
Yeah, what happened to American sovereignty if our national bank, if our central bank is now being controlled by China?
Now, on one hand, for the Chinese, that's another brilliant maneuver, isn't it?
Absolutely. But I think what the Chinese are going to do is they're going to back the yuan.
With the gold.
With the gold to some degree. And what they're going to try to do is displace the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of the world. It's already happening.
That's brilliant if they do that.
It's already happening in the sense that we were able after the war to get all the transactions in oil done in U.S. dollars.
Can it be stopped?
I don't see how, because he who got the gold, you know that.
Yeah, he who has the gold rules, right? That's the golden rule.
Makes the rules, and gold. You know, that's gold is people are saying gold's not relevant, but in fact, gold is for 5,000 years been the basis of all this kind of stuff, especially when you have paper currencies that are falling
apart.
And
it'll be around for at least 5,000 more, at least.
Well, the other thing is interesting. You know about shrinkflation?
No, you're throwing things at me I don't know about. I'm learning things.
Okay, shrinkflation. That's when you go to the store and you buy this box of cereal for the same price, and you open it up, and there's only 3/4 of what you were
okay
that you bought.
Instead of getting more, they're giving you less.
They're giving you less. So this is shrinkflation. In other words, the U.S. government says that our inflation rate relating to this paper money that they're printing like crazy is only 2%. Where other people that take things like shrinkflation into account, where you're getting less for the amount spent, say that it's a 9% inflation rate, which is huge.
That is huge.
So you just have to look at what you have to look at is, what did I pay for groceries on last year per month, as an example, and what am I paying for groceries now? Because with shrinkflation, you're just going to have to buy more of the product, even though that there's 3/4 of what was in the box before. Now you got to buy a box and a half.
It's like a bartender gives you a little tiny glass of wine when you expect it to be half full.
Yeah, but you see that the U.S. government doesn't have any ability to calculate shrinkflation.
No, they can't. Roger, stay with us. We're going to come back and take some phone calls with you next. Final hour to go here on Coast to Coast AM.